Welcome to Saturday Supercast, Episode 7. We're finally back to the creator interviews, and this week we've got Chet Lucero of Dreamform Defenders. We also talk a little bit about his independent work over at StormCore.com. Hope you enjoy it. I'm here with Chet Lucero of StormCore.com. That's StormCorps.com. And we're here to talk about his many projects, including Dreamform Defenders for Sugary Cereals and his own personal project, StormCore. So, welcome, Chet.
Hi. It's nice to be here.
So, Chet, why don't we start at the beginning, go through the stereotypical question of, like, how'd you get started on this whole comic book thing? What was your entry point? What was your approach vector to comics?
To web comics?
Well, just the comics art form. What got you drawing sequential art?
I got started, I guess, reading comics in college because I wasn't exposed to it as a kid, really. I don't know. I guess I started, like, after college, just reading a lot of comics. And eventually I just started drawing them, I guess. It's just a natural thing. You know, I ended up doodling a lot and they were turning into comics. So, you know, it was just, it was just a creative itch that needed scratching.
Well, you expressed an interest. Well, you told me earlier before the interview that you said that you were really into animation. So I guess visual storytelling was something that always just appealed to you?
Yeah. I grew up with cartoons. For the most part, and I guess comics just gave me a way to, you know, tell stories and stuff that, you know, I didn't need to put the time in that I would need if I animated things. Yeah, eventually, you know, after I discovered webcomics, like, I think in 2001 or something, and, you know, I saw all these people putting these comics online, and I thought, you know, wow, this is really cool, so, you know, I want to get in on this. You know, there's all these creative people out here, so, I tried to, you know, get an idea together, and eventually I came up with StormCore and started putting that up there. And I've been working on that ever since.
And since, what, 2003 or so? Is that when you first put it?
Yeah, well, actually I started in 2002. It was like a very rough, pencil, sketchy kind of comic up there, but I didn't like how it was going, so I stopped and just relaunched in 2003. I was just going full digital, full color at that point. And that's the current version that's, you know, online right now.
Well, that's interesting that you started out just it was a black and white comic just in pencil.
Yeah, the very first web comic I found it was Lovarian Adventures. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, a full page of sketched up, you know, comics, and I thought I'd try something like that, and I did that for a while. I think I had like 6 or 7 pages worth. StormCore that was like that, but you know, I didn't really like the way it was going, you know, for my story. Mm-hmm. So eventually I just, you know, stopped, and I spent a few months just retooling the story and trying to work on a way to get a full color version online, because that's what I really wanted, something that wouldn't eat up all my time. So, you know, it took me, I think, till like February or March that I relaunched, and I eventually got a full-color thing going, and there you have it.
Well, yeah, color definitely plays a very large part into your work. I mean, I don't think anybody can debate that. And if you look at any page of StormCore or a Dreamform Defender, and let's attack it from – let's go backwards from the present. Let's start with Dreamform Defenders, which is, you know, just loaded with all sorts of clever color usage. Was Dreamform Defenders something you had planned on doing a long time ago? Was it just like a sideline project that had been there before, or was it something that you came up with for Sugary Cereals?
It was something for Sugary Cereals, actually. When you told me about it, Sugary Cereals, back in December, I spent most of the holidays on a break from StormCore, so, you know, I had time to work on some kind of concept. And I think I started out with a story that was set in an underwater world kind of thing. And I was making up characters and stuff for that, but that didn't really go anywhere. So I scrapped that And then in January, I started going with sort of like a retro sci-fi thing, and eventually the same thing happened. And, you know, I was starting to get pretty frustrated. You know, none of these ideas were working, and I was flipping through my sketchbooks, just, you know, looking for some kind of idea. And then I see, like, in one little corner of the page, this little weird sketch of this guy in a barrel with three cannons on his back. And, you know, I'm looking at this guy, and I'm like, you know, I just started doodling him a little bit more. I thought, you know, he looks kind of interesting. So as I worked on him more, you know, suddenly this idea came in my head, like, you know, I wonder what I could do with this guy. You know, maybe he's, I don't know, from some kind of weird dream world or something. And then, you know, it's like a light bulb went off in my head, and suddenly, you know, this the whole Dreamform Defenders concept started appearing, and these other characters started, you know, appearing in my head as well. And I was actually able to salvage Wenda from the original underwater idea, and you know, Spacey was, well, he's changed a lot, but he was pulled from the sci-fi space one as well. And then after those two, there was just like a bunch of other Dreamform ideas that was just, you know, they came really easy after that, you know, as a, like a supporting cast that you'll see later on.
Mm-hmm. Like the fish character. I forget his name offhand, but the little puffy fish character with the star on his chest. 10 kinds of adorable, that guy. Well, but it sounds like you got the best of all worlds. I mean, you basically created an environment where you can do anything you want. And it sounds, and like one of the things that I remember when I first saw the character designs for Barrel King and Wenda and Spacey and later on Sheriff Mummy was that it was like nothing was off the table because it's a dream. You can get away with anything you want. And that was what made it so catchy to me. Because when I look at the Barrel King and I just think, like, wow, this guy looks like he just leapt out of a Mario Brothers game. And there he is standing right next to a mummy in Western attire. How could you go wrong with that concept? That was really, really neat. but also just gives you infinite, like, storytelling possibilities because now you can pick any environment you want. And this brings up another point that I want to get into, like, more nuts and bolts philosophy stuff about your work is... Now, I only have Dreamform Defenders and Stormcore to compare to each other, but in both cases, environment figures largely into the story. Like, where the characters are figures largely into the story. And so I was wondering if you could just talk about that a little bit. Like, well, how come, you know, not that you don't focus on character, because your characters do register as different people and with vibrant personalities, but more so than a lot of other comics that I've read, Stormcore only works, or a major factor of Stormcore is the fact that the Earth's atmosphere is so unstable. Dreamform Defenders is about dream worlds being threatened by invaders or dream worlds falling apart. So I was wondering if you could just talk about that for a minute.
Okay. Well, I guess that goes back to the how I come up with the ideas. I start with the basic worlds that you were talking about first, and try to, you know, find something that's interesting about them that, you know, I can tell a story in. And it's usually after I find something interesting like that, like a world that's, you know, plagued by all these crazy storms, or, you know, all these dream worlds that are, you know, having problems with nightmares and stuff, that, you know, ideas for certain characters and storylines and stuff start popping up after that.
Hmm. So your point of entry is world building.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what is – so just to catch people up, I guess we should have started with this at the beginning. Dreamform Defenders, essentially, what is the general – what's the log line? What's the one-sentence concept of the series? I mean, we named the characters, but let's just discuss what the series is, what the first story is going to be about. Think you could wrap it up in a quick TV soundbite description?
Let me see. I guess it – would have to be, it's about a bunch of dream forms who live in their own dream worlds, defending themselves against these phantasms, which are what pretty much give children nightmares. So I guess it's about the struggle between the two sides, you know, dream forms and phantasms, and their different worlds.
Okay, so the Dreamform Defenders have to go into nightmares to stop the guys, the phantasms, from causing the nightmares. But there's a I don't know if you want to go into this or not, but there's a catch to the battle. Like if they don't get out of there in time, something bad happens, right?
Yeah. If they get caught into this dream world that's being turned into a nightmare by all these phantasms, they start to turn into phantasms themselves. You know, that's how the phantasms, they increase their numbers. They're going around scaring all these, dreamers, these little kids, and, their dream world friends, and turning everything into nightmares and making more phantasms, and then they're just spreading and going on and on.
So that's got to create, like, a pretty high sense of tension at times in the story where they've got to stop the bad guys, but the clock is also ticking if they don't get out of there in a certain amount of time. Or if the bad guys get the upper hand and they don't get out in time, they could wind up becoming a bad guy, whether they like it or not.
Yeah. They have to stop, usually they have to stop the dream world from turning into a nightmare because, these dream worlds are usually run by one dream form who can't leave as long as the dreamer is there, so they can't just, suddenly, oh, look, there are phantasms here. Everybody, leaves before, it all turns into nightmares because, the gene form that's native there, they can't leave, so they're stuck there. So the gene form defenders, they have to, protect them.
I see. So like they're like local custodians of that dream, that yes. Dreamscape or whatever you want to call it. Interesting. Okay. So that's the premise, and this is an all-ages book. Would you describe StormCore as also all-ages? Because I was looking through it, and I didn't find anything that was particularly edgy or adult in it. But the content, the tone, was definitely a little bit more aged up. StormCore is more, I would compare it to, like, the level of adventure you'd find in, like, a good anime. It felt very much like a good anime to me.
Yeah, I try to leave it open to as wide an audience as possible, so I haven't really felt the need to add any mature themes or anything to it. So, just trying to not turn anyone away, if I can help it.
And I got to take my hat off to you with the vehicle designs in that series. There's some really, really cool looking. I mean, StormCore is worth the read just for looking at really neat vehicle designs alone. But then on top of that, you've got all those like crazy environmental designs with all the really beautiful color work on all the storms and the lightning and everything, and it's just gorgeous to look at. So that brings me to color and design, and that I think sets your work apart of a lot of comics on the web, a lot of comics in general. I think your attention to color and your is it fair to say whimsical sense of design?
Sure.
I hope it doesn't have the wrong connotations, but there is a general, even in StormCore, there's a general playfulness in what you do with the page to communicate your ideas. And those of you out there listening, you can read along by going to the Sugary Cereals website and checking out the first issue. We're going to just talk about a few of the first 8 pages of Dreamform Defenders. And one of the things that I think is just a good example of just how you tend to think. I don't want to say that you're thinking totally outside the box, but maybe just tending to think a little deeply about what you're getting out of your page design. And right on page 1, you've got a page of art that is part of a thought balloon. I mean, the kid's dream is the page, and you show that very quickly and easily by just having the last quote-unquote panel of the page be the boy in bed sleeping with his thought balloon encompassing the first 1, 2, 3, 4 panels. Where does this come from, this playfulness on your page design? Do you have anything to point to that it spurs you to think about your how you communicate your stories?
I don't know. I see them in my head more like a cartoon kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to. So when I picture the panels, they're more like shots in a cartoon, and I'm just trying to arrange them in a way that makes sense on a comic book page. Like on the first page, like you mentioned, with the boy Jake here sleeping, I just wanted to make a really simple way of showing that all this action for, you know, pretty much the entire episode takes place inside a dream or a series of dream worlds.
Well, it's, when I look at it, what I was trying to think, well, how the heck would I do that? How would I communicate that same thing? And I'm just thinking, like, and maybe this is my own limitations talking, but I would have had to add, like, two or three more panels to show a fading out from this dream sequence to showing Jake in bed sleeping. And this was just such a nice, eloquent, yet simple way of communicating that whole idea. You're taking advantage of the full power of comics by communicating a lot of information very, very quickly. So I just wanted to point that out and shine a light on it, just to pat you on the back and also point readers at what a clever boy you are.
Thanks.
I didn't mean that to sound so condescending. I honestly didn't. But what's also really cool about your work that I really dig, and this is one of the reasons I invited you to join Sugary Cereals, is you look at page 2, panel 1, 2, 3, and your use of color to render backgrounds is really, really neat and really interesting. And I'm wondering, did you actually hand-draw those backgrounds, or was that all done on the computer?
They were done really sketchy in pencil, just to give an indication of what I wanted to do digitally. And, of course, I did it, you know, I finalized everything digitally after that. But for the backgrounds, usually it's just, when you see a panel like that, it's usually just done very roughly in pencil. It's just, you know, as an indicator.
So your finished pages, quote-unquote, aren't, they're much more raw by comparison to, say, original art from comics from, like, 10, 15 years ago where everything was done on the page. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, since, you know, the comics I do are on the web, I usually lean more heavily towards, you know, digital elements. So, you know, generally I have the characters, you know, even though I could probably do it all digitally now, you know, a good old Wacom tablet.
Yeah.
I still like using, you know, ink and paper, you know, to draw the actual characters and usually give some indication of what I want to do digitally, you know, for the backgrounds or for a certain effect or, you know, anything else like that. So it's probably like 80% digital now and maybe 20%, you know, old-fashioned pencil and paper.
Wow. Wow. So are you drawing this on, like, any kind of fancy paper like Bristol, or is this all just on typing paper? Just on whatever paper you can use?
It's on a big sketch pad, actually. I'm not using any fancy paper or anything.
Oh, wow.
Because the scanner can't seem to tell the difference, at least to me.
No, that's a good way of putting it. The scanner can't tell the difference, and that is the big difference between making comics now and making comics, say, in, like, 1997 or 1995, is that, you know, you used to have to shoot it on a camera, and the camera could tell the difference between pencil on paper and ink on paper, whereas the scanner, you can pretty much – you got a lot more versatility nowadays. I was at the Women's Writers Conference in Lexington, Kentucky last year, and Amy Kim Ganter was speaking there, as well as Sarah Turner, my buddy on Make Like a Tree Comics. And Amy Kim Ganter was talking about how she doesn't have any real, quote-unquote, original art anymore. She does so much cross-platform work between analog on paper and doing things digitally. And she says, what the heck do I care if I have original art as long as it looks great when it's printed or when it's on the screen? So, and I thought that was a fairly modern and appropriate attitude, given the we're in the 21st century now. I mean, it's up to each artist individually, I think, to make that choice. But yeah, I think it's important to accept both. There's nothing wrong with not having original art.
Yeah.
And especially given that, you know, just look at the pages look at the Dreamform pages. They look really, really good. So there's no. So what if it doesn't? You don't have original pages. The final product is really good. To go back to the playfulness, let's talk about the sequence where the dream world, Spacey's dream world, begins to fall apart. That was very, very cool looking to me. It was this neat, iconic abstraction, but yet at the same time, it's visually implying the reality. Like I said to you before, if the panels are represent the quote-unquote reality these characters live in and you want to destroy that reality, destroy the panel. So I thought that was a really clever use of a really clever way to communicate an awful lot again, once again. There's no questioning what's happening in on, say, page 3, panel 4. And the whole sequence after that, where they're running away from the world falling apart, was just absolutely gorgeous. So what was there any inspiration for that, or was this a matter of just playing around until it felt right?
It was a lot of trial and error for the most part. I was really stumped for the longest time on how to do this without making it look like, say, some kind of sci-fi black hole kind of thing that might normally appear in Spacey's sci-fi dream world. You know, I needed something that looked like it didn't belong there. So, you know, like you said, you know, I eventually figured out how to just, you know, what if I just break the panel itself? And, you know, it seemed to work out.
And it doesn't – see, the neat thing is I don't want to turn this into a tirade against digital artists, because that's something that a lot of, you know, the older guys all like to do. And I don't really have a stance on one side or the other. But one of the things that I do see that happen every once in a while that I think is – you know, I'm not as big of a fan of is when a digital artist gets a hold of Photoshop and just starts breaking out every filter in the universe to try to, and it's cool to play. It's a good idea to play when you're making art, but it would be so simple to just break out the twirl filter and put that in the panel to show the world getting warped. And that's fine, but to me, it lacks a creative edge. And so what you did, I think, was it showed a little bit more thought. You're thinking a little bit more deeply about what the art form can do, rather than just running a Photoshop filter on it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I try to limit the number of filters I use. I mean, I still use some on occasion. You know,
sure.
They're nice and pretty and everything. you know, I try to limit it to the very basic stuff that you know that you need to make these pages.
That's an individual taste thing too, but you know, yeah. In my mind, it is a good idea to try to limit yourself in some ways because it forces you to be more creative. You know, that whole story about Jaws, about like the reason it was such a good movie is because Spielberg couldn't actually show the shark, and so that's why it was so scary, because we never saw the shark. And if they would have made it today, it would have been all digital, and we'd have seen the shark for like 45% of the movie. So this notion of the technology does free us up, but we still have to at least some. I tend to think we should exercise restraint just to give ourselves a chance to think it through before we use it. Because I think when things become too easy for us to do, then we can just do things without thinking, and the important thing is to just be mindful when you're telling a story. So that's the only reason I point, you know, shine a light on what you did there. I think that was really neat. The next thing I think that was absolutely – it was really cool, and I don't know if you even think this is cool, but on page 4 – there's a scene where Sheriff Mummy, it's the bottom tier of panels, Sheriff Mummy is zipping his bandages to tie up Spacey, and there's this middle panel in between where you just kind of focus on the bandages for a second, and you get little whipping noises, but it's also overlapped by his bandages from the panel before, which crosses over to the final panel to wrap around Spacey, and I thought that was just a very cute way to tie the whole moment together, but making a special moment for us to just consider the bandages. That was really, it was just really neat. It's another example of using static images to communicate an awful lot and creating beats without interrupting anything. Does that make sense?
Yeah. That was actually something that was more like an accident on paper. I noticed, you know, that, you know, hey, maybe this could work if I link all three of these together. All three of these panels, and it actually had a nice effect of you know, combining all three of them in a way.
Yeah, because I mean, I think it would still work if you didn't cross over the bandage, but because you did, it's almost as if the bandage is kind of taking, it's kind of going outside of time and coming back into time, if that makes any sense. Like, we can consider it as part of panel 1, we can consider it as part of panel 1, let me count the panels, 1, 2, 3, 4. We can consider it as part of panel 4, we can consider it as part of panel 5 and panel 6. So in that way, it becomes like part of this like hyper time that comics can achieve, which is so exciting to me, is this way you can kind of bend and stretch time to do all sorts of nutty things and use composition in your work to communicate as much as you use the pacing of panels. So again, just cute way of thinking about clever ways to communicate through your pages. So that's yet again one of the ways that you stand out as one of the better digital comics artists out there. One thing I really, really liked about Dreamform Defenders as a concept when you first pitched it at me was the notion that everybody had a special ability, like a special transforming moment. What it reminds me of is this kind of like, just this, what made shows like Power Rangers and Transformers and I'm trying to think of any others offhand, or like Thundercats, what made those shows so popular with people, to me, was this notion of the activating the special mode kind of thing. Lionel raises the sword and he turns into a grown, where he gets, you know, all of his friends get, like, their eyes light up and they can do more exciting stuff. The Transformers have this alternate modes. Now I'm in robot mode, I can do more stuff. Power Rangers, they power up and then the suits are on them and everything. There's this kind of thing that I think of when I was a little kid, this compelling aspect of transforming, turning into something new, and activating some hidden secret power inside of you kind of thing. And the fact that you chose to do that for all the different Dreamform Defenders, I thought was really, really cool. What was the was there any specific inspiration for that? It was just something that was just like a whimsical, like, it might be neat.
Yeah, it was actually something that was kind of inspired by the 80s cartoons, like you mentioned, you know, Thundercats and everything. I wanted to give them something unique for each character. And, you know, it ended up, I just gave them all these, you know, funky new abilities that were unique to themselves, you know, that they picked up from their own dream worlds.
Right.
So, it turned out really fun.
And I really like how there's different tiers of coolness to them. What I mean by that is like, Barrel King, I've already told you, is probably my favorite character in the book, but let's face it, being big and strong like Spacey, like what he can do, is probably what an 8-year-old boy would consider that cooler than being able to shoot whatever you want out of a cannon on your back, depending on the kid, I suppose. But there's certain levels of, like, what's typically cool, you know, the He-Man transformation into the big strong guy, but then there's the more whimsical aspects like Barrel King and Wenda, who turns into like a flying manta ray type deal. I really like that notion of nothing's too weird for this story, and if her special powers to turn into a flying manta ray, then so be it. It fits with her personality and it fits with the dream world she came from. So
yeah, that's probably something that these characters have an advantage over than, you know, what I've got over in Storm Corps. You know, they're not limited by the laws of real world physics. You know, they can do all these crazy, you know, things, and, you know, it works for them because, you know, they're dream forms in you know, dream world. You know, anything can happen there.
It also evokes this kind of, like, one of the things I talk about a lot with my friends, and also in like the Make Like a Tree Comics podcast I've done in the past, is I like the idea of basing stories around the idea of what would make a cool toy. Just not because, not to cheapen what I do by any means, but just it's a fun starting point, because if it would make a cool toy, then it would probably be fun to read or watch on television. Just because with a toy, you have to think of a playability factor. How fun would this thing be to play with, or how cool would it be to look at? So this notion of the transforming and special featured action figures, I can see Dreamform Defenders easily as an action figure line. And be really a lot of fun to play with. I could see this, like, fitting a lot more along the lines of like the Rankin Bass kind of thing. Like, if you think of like Silverhawks and Thundercats, the villains in those shows tended to, there wasn't one mold, you know, they were all different shapes and sizes and all sorts of different kinds of crazy monsters. So I can see Dreamform fitting in more along those kinds of properties.
Yeah.
So then that does bring up the question of Storm Corps. Storm Corps is, I would say, probably a little bit more grounded in its rules and its mythology. It feels much more like just like a straightforward action adventure kind of tale. But like, I'm trying to think of a comparison. It's sci-fi adventure, but it's not boring. Not that I think sci-fi adventure is boring, but it can be sometimes when you're just talking about spatial anomalies all the time. But there's like a lot of character tension, and there's also just the whole adventure of these crazy flying ships and these really crazy action sequences. Is there anything that you find particularly, well, I don't want to say better, but what thrills you about one or the other? What are the pros and cons of each? Because now you're doing two, even though they both are similar in the sense that they have very rich worlds that you've developed, and the story is kind of hinges on the limitations of the worlds that they live in. What are the pros and cons of working with, say, something that's much more cartoony, much more over the top, much more nothing's off the table, and then on the other hand, something that's much more grounded? It seems very planned out, very thought out. How is it different working between the two of them? Anything that stands out for you?
Well, Dreamform, it's a lot more free in what the characters can do in the world, you know, because, like I said, they're not bound by normal physics. So I tend to have a little bit more, you know, wacky kind of fun with them, whereas they're also kind of limited by the story, because, you know, this is kind of like an all-ages thing. And, you know, Stormcore can actually go into different places, even though, you know, I haven't gone into any mature things, but, you know, they can go into, like, a longer, more epic kind of, a role in Stormcore. So I guess I can explore, like, a larger story element in Stormcore, while, I, you know, in Dreamform, I just, you know, have some, you know, crazy, you know, fun that, you know, I wouldn't normally be able to, you know, to do in Stormcore, because, you know, it has to be somewhat believable in within their sci-fi world and everything.
Yeah, and even though you don't introduce any, like, quote-unquote, like, well, you don't introduce any NC-17 material in Stormcore. There's stuff that you can imply. There's a lot of implied material, as well as kind of shared histories between the characters that you can be more oblique with, that maybe would be more difficult with something like Dreamform Defenders, you think?
Yeah, you know, Dreamform, I can't really get too very super serious, you know, with that. That, you know, that's more of Stormcore's area with that. So, I kind of get, like, both worlds to play with there. You know, like, I can be, like, all serious and stuff in Stormcore and just be, you know, silly and weird in the Dreamform world. And it's nice just being able to go back and forth, you know, just for a change of pace. Because, you know, after a while, I've been working on Stormcore for, like, a couple of years now. And, you know, even after a while, it just gets kind of tired sometimes, you know, just doing one theme over and over. So, you know, being able to work on Dreamform Defenders now, you know, it's kind of like a nice breath of fresh air, and it's kind of revitalizing, you know, how I feel about Stormcore in a way.
That was my next question. I'm wondering about that. Like, how does it change working on Stormcore?
Stormcore is, it's very hard to work on it. You know, I'm not really, you know, I grew up on cartoons and stuff, and, you know, this serious stuff was always, you know, not really my thing before. So, you know, I wanted to challenge myself with it. So, you know, that's why I went in this direction with Stormcore, because, you know, I wanted to do something hard, you know, that would be challenging. So it's worked out. You know, I've learned a lot of things working on Stormcore, you know, all this time. And, you know, I've used, you know, what I've learned in Dreamform Defenders, you know, with coloring and just, you know, story writing, character development and everything. And I think they're working well off of each other, you know, because I'm learning different things from them now, and, you know, it's really interesting to, you know, to see where I can go from here.
Well, I'm just thinking in terms of with Dreamform Defenders, you did a really great job of very concisely introducing people to the concepts of the world. Pretty quickly, we have to figure out where these characters come from, and you do it through Spacey. We meet the Dreamform Defenders, like, he's like our surrogate, right? He's the guy that we're supposed to identify with, is being confused about all this stuff happening, and they're explaining to him the things that they would be explaining to us. Whereas with Stormcore, you kind of got to take your time. You had a lot more pages to work with to develop everything. Like, I'm just thinking about just the first chapter of Stormcore, where you're just, there's an action sequence, and there's all these characters talking to each other, and there's all this, like, subtle hinting at relationships between people, but you don't know the full details of the relationship. There's nothing very explicit. Nothing is spelled out for you. Is it May who has this relationship with Hippo?
I'm sorry? Hippo?
The character May, is that her name? The one who...
Yes.
Yeah, she has, like, a history with Hippo, but so does that other fellow. What's it? I'm sorry, his name's not coming to my mind.
It's Rick.
Rick, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So in that sequence where we see that, like, May is clearly surprised that Hippo is not necessarily the friendliest of characters to her, you do it through the dialogue, like, essentially imply that they have this shared history, and through her surprise we find out that, okay, Hippo was originally apparently a good guy, and now he's doing things that he probably shouldn't be doing. But whereas with Dreamform Defenders, you have characters basically saying, welcome to the imagination, we're Dreamform Defenders, and this is what we do, right? So I'm wondering, if that's going to change your... Not that you would incorporate those storytelling elements over to Stormcore, but just if it would, if nothing else, if it freshens what you do at Stormcore, because you're kind of forced into this world where you have to very concisely do everything.
Yeah, Stormcore was, I originally just written everything just, like, very uncompressed. You know, I just took my time explaining everything. But, Dreamform Defenders, it's... The way Sugary Serials is set up, I have a set number of pages to do this,
right?
This story. So, I have to, figure out a way to get everything constantly moving. And that's just not something that I've had to do in Stormcore. So I think that it would work in Stormcore because, the way it is now, the story's going to take years before it's done. And I really don't want to be doing this 10 years from now. So, yeah, it's teaching me some stuff about compression and moving the characters along further, mm-hmm. and faster. So I'm kind of leaning towards that in Stormcore now. Once I get going with that again, yeah. Well, I'm learning a lot from both.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that brings up the whole notion of this is part of the whole philosophy behind the Sugary Serials model was this notion of in animation, you get about what between 17 and 20 minutes. To tell an entire story, like in episodic animation, like when you talk about, like, especially 80s properties like Thundercats, G.I. Joe, Transformers, etc., you only got a limited amount of time, and you've got to communicate an awful lot, especially on a show like G.I. Joe, where you've got 150 characters, and you got to pick six, and you got to tell the story about these six characters all within the confines of 21 minutes, and create compelling little cliffhangers just before the commercial breaks. There was something I studied when I was doing my comic Silver and the Periodic Forces on the Make Like a Tree site, and I was doing that while I was working on stories like The Replacements and The Front, which are much more long drawn out, paced very differently. So it was a huge challenge to figure out how little I could use to communicate as much as I wanted to about the characters. And of course, you're never going to get to communicate everything you want about the character anyway, but it's a fun experiment for me anyway to boil it down to, okay, what is the single sentence I can use to get everything across about this guy? And that creates a sense of immediacy in the writing, right? Like, for instance, Sheriff Mummy, you use a lot just in his gesture and his dialect, his lingo, to communicate how he's different from Spacey. And same with Barrel King. I mean, that's one of the things that stood out as well, is that Barrel King has this weird little... vocal inflection, or not inflection, what is it called? The speech impediment kind of thing.
A lisp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Sheriff Mummy, on the other hand, is, he's like John Wayne, like some kind of like stereotypical cowboy, but he's got bandages all over his body. So, you find ways to very immediately communicate the differences in the characters so they don't all feel like they have the same voice. So you did that very well, and that's another reason I'm really glad to have Dreamform Defenders and the launch issues of Sugary Serials. You seem to really get it. So I guess I'm guessing that it probably has a lot to do with you paying attention to animation for so long, like more so than comics. Okay. Well, I was just going to ask you, what were the big influencers on you as far as animation? Like, if you were really in animation, what were the ones that, like, you keep coming back to again and again, and you've just been a quiver ever since you've seen them, that kind of thing?
I would have to say probably Looney Tunes. I grew up with that a lot of the Warner Brothers cartoons, Tiny Toons, Animaniacs in the 90s. They were a really big inspiration, when I was growing up, just to get me to draw, a lot of stuff. And,
So, okay, well, no, that's an excellent place to start. I mean, Animaniacs by all accounts, is like one of the most brilliantly written and animated shows ever, so... Yeah, I can see that a little bit. I was just wondering about if there was any action adventure in there as well, because Dreamform is this wonderful mix of like crazy over the top whimsy, but then with like really intense action sequences.
Yeah, actually, a lot of the action cartoons like He-Man and Transformers and stuff in the 80s, I really can't remember too much of them these days because I was just a little kid back then, and I remember certain flashes of certain scenes and stuff like that. I guess a lot of the action cartoons that I've watched, it's from what I remember recently, like the newer He-Man series that was out a few years ago.
Yeah, the
I
Mike
think,
Young series, yeah.
and also Reboot
Okay.
by Mainframe Entertainment.
Yeah.
And they also did Beast Wars,
Oh, yeah.
Transformers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was really into that too.
Okay.
I followed those a lot, you know, on the action side of things. And also War Planets, I think.
Yeah.
I watched that for a little bit before it dropped off the TV, and you know, I'm wondering what happened, you know,
Yeah, that
to
is a good
that.
question. I don't know what happened with that. And like a lot of the voice actors from Beast Wars were on War Planets as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can totally see that in your work now that I think about it. And when I think about the kind of cinematography you got in Beast Wars, there was definitely an amping up of the action element because they were able to do things that you simply could not do before. I remember one particular scene in like the second season where Tarantulas, remember how he could turn into like a vehicle mode after he became a transmetal, and he does this thing where he turns into like his car mode and zooms at the camera, and the camera follows him up a wall, and he goes up like it's like a curved wall, and he goes up the curved wall and flies right at the camera, and then as he passes over the camera turns over and follows him as he lands on the ground and transforms into robot mode. And I was thinking about how, well,
Yeah.
here's the future where we can do this with 3D animation, where you just could, this would be very difficult with 2D animation. Are there any final thoughts you'd like to share with everybody? Anything that you've just been dying to get off your chest about your general ideas about what you do? Anything that everybody, that you, if there's like a secret that nobody knows that you could reveal here or anything like that?
No, I don't think so. Nothing like that.
Well, I wasn't going for like the juicy Jerry Springer thing. I was just going for the this is a chance for you to kind of speak out to your fans, 'cause hopefully some of them are reading Dreamform Defenders. And if you are reading it and if you're enjoying it, please let Chet know. I mean, you can go to the Sugar Cereals forum and let him know, or go to stormcore.com and shoot him an email. So But again, I'm very excited to have it as part of the Sugar Cereals lineup. I hope to see more issues of Dreamform Defenders in the future. We'll see, but I'm excited about it.
Yeah, definitely. So, go read Sugary Cereals when it opens, or should be open by now. This is
Yep.
on the air.
If you're listening to this, then the Sugary Cereal site has launched. Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Well, thank you again, Chet.
Thank you for having me.
Head for sugary cereal.